We take the Bible very seriously. And so for those of you who have Muslim friends, Muslim family members, in the time ahead, this is something that is not going to go away for us here at Calvary. We are going to be introducing more and more ministry opportunities for you to lead your Muslim friends to Jesus Christ. It is absolutely essential that they understand, that they hear about the love of God. Nowhere in the Quran does it say to a Muslim that God loves them. There is no sure plan of salvation for them in the Quran. Jesus said in the last days that many false prophets would come, and there'd be a great deception in the last days. We're seeing in the world around us an advancing renewal of the Islamic threat and of its agenda for global expansion. And throughout history, the only thing that has stemmed that, and I challenge you to go look at history, the only thing that has stemmed that flow has been a strong stand by God's people in the Word of God and in defense of a land. Amen. And so we need to be very prayerful and very loving and very knowledgeable to witness and to share Jesus Christ like never before. I believe we are at an amazing time. You guys, those of you who are Christians tonight, don't you think that this is a time that the prophets desired to look into and find out about? It is an absolutely amazing time. And so I encourage you to be bold and strong in the Lord. You guys, if you have not seen Bridget Gabriel on CNN or Fox News, then maybe you have seen her on the many broadcast on the internet. You can just Google her name and come up with tremendous information. She has been speaking all across the United States, America, her adopted home. She was a Lebanese, or she is Lebanese, American now, having been born in Lebanon. And I tell you, if you want to get the details of her amazing life, please get your hands on her book. The book is entitled Because They Hate. It is a fantastic book. And for those of you who are home here to Calvary, it has been our book of the month. After her time with us tonight, she will be signing books out in the courtyard so you can buy them. We only have 2,000 books. We've got over 3,000 people. So you do the math. First come, first serve. But get your hands on her book and then get it signed by her. But we are so blessed tonight to have her. And so please give a warm welcome to Bridget Gabriel as she shares with us tonight.
Thank you. I love you too. Boy, I am honored to be here tonight. And I tell you, this beautiful music, I am so sorry we have to stop the music so you can listen to me. But what a blessing. I am so honored to be here tonight, to speak to the body of Christ, to wake you up, to make you realize what is happening in our country. I hope that if you take nothing from here tonight, but you will go inspired, motivated, empowered, to network with each other, to mobilize, to protect our country, to be informed, to learn what we can do as citizens to make a difference in our country. The issue of terrorism is something very, very close to me because I have experienced it personally. I am not only an expert like the many experts who study it 16 hours a day and live and work it 16 hours a day, but I am someone who was personally affected by it. I come from Lebanon. Many people do not realize that Lebanon used to be the only majority Christian country in the Middle East. When people think of the Middle East, they think all the people in the Middle East are Muslims, with the exception of the state of Israel. Not necessarily true. Lebanon used to be the only majority Christian country in the Middle East. When we got our independence from France, the majority were Christians. The Muslims were the minority. We were the descendants of the Phoenicians. We were good in business. We focused on building the country. And because we had Judeo-Christian values, we were multicultural. We were open-minded. We were fair. We were tolerant. We had an open border policy. We welcomed everybody into our country because we wanted to share with them the Westernization that we have created. We wanted to share with them the beauty, not only the geography of the place, but the love and the hospitality of a Middle Eastern culture and a loving Christian heart who welcomed everybody in. The Muslims used to send their children from all around the surrounding Arabic countries to study in our universities because we had built the best universities in the Arabic world. They would graduate. They would stay and work in our economy because we had built the best economy in the Middle East, in the Arabic world, even though we did not have any oil. Sadly, all that began to change as the Christians started shrinking and the Muslims started growing. And the reason why we Christians got married to one spouse until do us part. We get married, we have children from the time our children are born. We have 2-3 children, maybe 4 by a stretch. From the time our kids are born, we focus on educating them, giving them the best education, what schools we're going to send them to, what lifestyle we're going to give them. The Muslims, on the other hand, multiply at a much faster pace because of their religion and their socioeconomic status. The most famous Muslim in the world today is Osama bin Laden. Osama bin Laden is 1 out of 53 children. He himself has 27 children. Between father and son, they have produced 80 children. 80 children. How many Christians or Jews or Buddhists or anybody else do you know, my friend, who have produced 27 or 53 children? Not many, if they're willing to confess it out loud. The Muslims are allowed to marry up to 4 wives at a time, and this is how they multiply. A Muslim man, all he has to do to divorce his wife is say, you are divorced 3 times in a row and she is divorced. No attorney required. He has to wait 24 hours before he marries another one. I tell you, they've got a thing going on. And they multiply fast. So by 1970, the Muslims had become the majority. And we being Christian and being fair-minded and open and tolerant and multicultural and all of that good stuff, we welcomed the Palestinians into our country. We were the only Middle Eastern country, the only Christian country in the Middle East that took in a third wave of Palestinian refugees when King Hussein kicked them out of Jordan and they came into Lebanon. Most of them were Muslims. They put their heads together with the Muslims in Lebanon, and that's what tipped the scale. They became the majority, they started working together, and they declared war on the Christians. By 1974, 4 years later, the Christians became prisoners to their homes and their communities. We became prisoners to our towns. We stopped traveling. We used to go, for example, my family and I used to go to Beirut every Christmas to spend Christmas with the rest of our extended family. And we stopped traveling. And I would ask my parents, how come we're not traveling this year? How come we're not going to Beirut for Christmas? Because I didn't want to be at home with Christmas with my parents. I'm an only child. My parents were old. You have to understand, my parents were married for 22 years. They could not have any children. My mother was 55 years old, and my father was 60 when I was born. You talk about a miracle in their lives. God does make miracles happen. And I see a lot of young ones in the crowd, so you better be careful. So I didn't, you know, and I found out later that the reason why we stopped traveling is because the Palestinians and the Muslims would set up fly-by-night checkpoints, and they would stop cars traveling, and they would look at their IDs. And in the Middle East, our religion is written on our ID. You are either a Christian, a Muslim, or a Jew. Not only what religion we belong to is written on our ID, but also what sect of that religion we belong to. So when they would stop the car and look at people's IDs and find out that this is a Christian family traveling, they would get everyone out of the car and shoot them in cold blood. The word traveled fast, and this is why we Christians stopped traveling. By 1975, the Muslims and the Palestinians had organized to create their own army within our country. And they created an army called Jaysh Lebnan al-Arabi, the Arabic Lebanese army. And the word Arab in the Middle East is referred only to Muslims, not to Christians. The Christians of the Middle East are not Arabs. The Christians in Lebanon are Phoenicians. The Christians in Egypt are Coptic. The Christians in Syria are Assyrians. The Christians in Iraq are called Assyrians. We only speak the Arabic language because the Muslim conquerors who conquered our countries with using the sword and forced conversions forced us to speak the Arabic language. In Christian churches all around the world today, and at least in my Christian community, in the Maronite church, up until today, in our churches, we still speak the Aramaic language, the language in which Jesus spoke. So they started, the Palestinians and the Muslims formed an army and started massacring the Christians. They would go in and take city after city, town after town, and massacre anybody in their way. One of the most famous massacres in Lebanon is the massacre of the Moor. The stories, the atrocities that the Muslims and the Palestinians committed was unbelievable. They would walk into a bomb shelter. They would find a family hiding with in a bomb shelter. They would find a mother and a father with a little baby. They would take the baby, tie one leg of the baby to the mother and another leg to the father and pull the parents apart, splitting the child in half. The biggest disservice the American media did to the American public is not show the beheading of Daniel Pearl and Nick Berg. I think the American public has the right to see the barbarism that is heading our way. They would walk into our churches. They would urinate and defecate on the altar using the Bible as toilet paper. They would walk into the Christian cemeteries, break the crosses, and get the bodies out of the cemeteries. The last lady that worked for me, I hired her because she was mentally disturbed. Because they made her slaughter her own son on her lap. They tied her to a chair, tied a knife to her hand, and made her slaughter her own son. They would crucify the Christian men, build crosses, hang them on a cross, and not only crucify them, but put honey on their chests and their private parts so the incest would bite them and they would die a painful death. They committed monstrosities that the Western media never reported because all the media was located in West Beirut, the area that the Muslims controlled, and all the Western media was whipped into political correctness and nobody wanted to say anything that Yasser Arafat and the Muslims did not allow. We, the Christians, paid the price. We, the Christians, were so good-hearted, were so open-minded, were so fair, were so tolerant, were so non-judgmental that we refused to read the writing on the wall. When all these things were happening in our country, we put our head in the sand because we could not believe that people who lived amongst us, that our neighbors, our friends, our colleagues could turn against us in a heartbeat once the declaration of Allahu Akbar, the Islamic call to prayer, was called. They surrounded my town in trying to take it over. We were the only last Christian town left in South Lebanon. They surrounded my town to take it over. When they were trying to bomb my town, they bombed my home, bringing it down and burying me under the rubble wounded as the perpetrators shouted, Allahu Akbar. I ended up in a hospital for 2.5 months and undergone many surgeries. And as a child, laying in a hospital bed, hooked to needles and blood bags on one arm and IV in another arm, and I would look at my parents and I would say, why did they do this to us? And my father would look into my eyes and he would pause. And then he finally said, they hate us because we are Christians. The Muslims consider us infidels and they want to kill us. So I knew since I was 10 years old that my only crime was that I was born into the Christian faith and lived in a Christian town. We ended up leaving the hospital and coming back home. But our home was no longer the home I left. I ended up living in a bomb shelter, underground, with no electricity, no water, no heat, and very little food. To get some food, my mother and I would crawl under snipers' bullets and under the bombs. And we would dig out grass that grew around the bomb shelter and different vegetation and wild dandelions and wild grass that we would dig out and eat. That was the only greenery we had. I learned how to peel thorn in my ripe, tender fingers at age 10 and 11 and 12 so I can eat the stalk that grew inside of the thorn. To get some water, my mother and I would crawl under snipers' bullets to a nearby spring. My The name of my town is Marjayun, the Valley of Springs. We had 8 springs in my town. And we would go under sniper's bullets to get some water. And before we left, every time, we would say our last goodbyes because we did not know if we're going to come back alive or dead, simply to get a drink of water. And we would get to the nearby spring, and my mom had to use her stocking on top of the gallon of water to catch all the worms and all the maggots and all the rocks so we can drink the water. And then we would crawl back. To warm up in the middle of the winter, we lived in the mountains and it was so cold. My father would go out into our garden and he would break tree twigs and he would bring them into the bomb shelter and he would pour kerosene and benzene and mazut on them. And he would light a fire and we would huddle around the fire. And we had an agreement because many nights we would fall asleep huddling around the fire because we were freezing cold. And we had an agreement, whoever woke up first would drag the other two outside and slap them on their face until they wake up because of carbon monoxide poisoning. We would pass out. And this became my life. And this was my life from age 10 to age 17, living like this, robbed of my youth. Meanwhile, the Muslims and the Palestinians were massacring us, were killing us, were bombing us. I remember when I was 13 years old, one day a friend of ours stopped by, and one of our Christian militia fighters, and he stopped by. He said, "I'm just stopping to warn you. I want to tell you that we heard on the radios that the Muslims are planning a big attack against us tonight, and I want to wish you a merciful death in case they kill us." And he left. And after he left, I remember crying, and I asked my mother if I can put on my Sunday best, my Easter dress that she had made for me. It was a blue dress with white flowers because I wanted to look pretty when I'm dead, knowing that there would be no one to bury me. And I remember at age 13 years old, my mother combing my long black hair and tying a white ribbon in my hair that matched the white flowers in my dress. And I was crying, begging her, "I don't want to die. I'm only 13 years old. I don't want to die." And there was nothing my mom could say to me. There was nothing she could say. We sat at the corner of our bomb shelter. It was like 5 o'clock in the evening, and we knew the night is coming. And we held each other's hands, my mother, my father, and I, and we said the Lord's Prayer, because there was no one we could trust in, but put our faith in the Lord, that He will protect us, that we will walk in the valley of death, and He will be our shadow, and He will be with us. And my parents held my hand, and they said, "When the Muslims come to slaughter us tonight, you just run towards Israel and never look back. We'll create a distraction. We lived a long life. You are young. Just run and never look back." Thank God I didn't have to make that decision that night. And the only reason we stayed alive is that's the night when Israel came in the middle of the night during Operation Litani and started pushing the Palestinians and the Muslims away from us to protect us and set up checkpoints around our area so we can stay alive and they can defend us. We became their buffer zone, the security zone in southern Lebanon. And this went on for another 5 years. And in 1982, Israel invaded Lebanon. And the only reason Israel invaded Lebanon in 1982 is because Syria and Iran had gotten involved in the war in Lebanon and started financing and supporting and protecting the radical Muslims who were fighting in Lebanon and shelling Israel in the name of Lebanese resistance, to the point the northern towns in Israel, their lives ceased to exist just like us. They were living in bomb shelters. When I hear our president today talk about Syria and Iran, the axis of evil, I look back and I think, where was he living 30 years ago? Syria and Iran are nothing new. Syria and Iran were supporting and financing the terrorist organization, turning Lebanon into a terrorist hub. The Lebanese war was not a war between the Christian Lebanese and the Muslim Lebanese. The Lebanese war was the front lines in the war on terror that started over 30 years ago in the Middle East, and the Muslims started destroying the first and only Christian country in the Middle East because we were much weaker than Israel. We could not protect ourselves. We didn't have an army literally to protect us, and they were able to use our democracy against us, our fair-mindedness against us, our open border policy against us. Iran and Syria were recruiting Muslims from all over the Arabic world who came to fight in Lebanon. They were Muslims coming from Egypt, from Syria, from Saudi Arabia, from Iraq, from Iran, from all over the Arabic world to fight the Christians, to control the Christians in Lebanon, and to create a terror base from which to fight Israel and then launch their attacks against the West. During that bombing, my mother became wounded and we had to take her to an Israeli hospital for treatment. For my mother, it was a life-saving experience. For me, it was a life-changing experience because we ended up going to Israel. And up to that point, I knew that the Israelis were saving our lives. We were alive because of the Israeli army protecting us. But when we went to Israel, that's when I realized that we are truly fighting a clash of civilization between the West and the East, the Judeo-Christian values and the Muslim Arabic values. We were in the hospital in Israel, and there were hundreds of people wounded on the floor. And I remember looking around and seeing the Israeli soldiers and the Israeli doctors treat everybody according to their injuries. I could not believe my eyes. There were Muslims brought in from Lebanon, Palestinian terrorists brought in from Lebanon, Israeli soldiers, Christians. I could not believe my eyes. I said to myself, I can understand why the Israelis are treating me. I am their friend. I am their ally. I am their buddy. I am their buffer zone. But why the heck are they treating the Muslims and the Palestinians? Little did I know about the values and the character of the Israeli people. The doctors treated everyone according to their injury. They did not see religion. They did not see political affiliation. They did not see nationality. They saw people in need and they helped. The doctor treated my mother before he treated the Israeli soldier laying next to her. I could not believe my eyes. They took us to the fourth floor of the hospital. And we were not there but maybe 5 minutes. And I remembered the commotions of people running through our room, through the nurse's station, through our room, and out to the balcony to see what was happening. And I remember walking out to the balcony and looking down to see what all this noise was all about. And I saw two Israeli helicopters that just landed, bringing in Israeli soldiers wounded from Lebanon. And they were carrying them on stretchers into the emergency room. And I stood at that balcony feeling sick to my stomach, feeling brokenhearted, feeling ashamed, feeling embarrassed, feeling out of place, because I knew that these people were wounded because of the war with my country. I didn't even look at anyone standing around me. There were hundreds of people around me, mothers and fathers and sisters and daughters and sons and brothers of Israeli soldiers wounded in the war in Lebanon. And all of a sudden, I felt this tapping on my shoulder. And I looked to my side, and there was an Israeli nurse standing next to me. And she looks at me and she said, "You are new here, aren't you?" And I said, "Yes, they just brought in my mother. She's in this room." And this lady puts her arm around me, and she holds me and looks into my eyes, and she says, "Don't worry, we'll take good care of her. Everything will be just fine. And if you need anything, just call my name. My name is Leah." I'll never forget that name. I was so touched. I was, for the first time in my life, I experienced civilization. I experienced compassion. I experienced the human quality that I knew for a fact my culture will not be able to show their enemy in their most trying moments. I knew that Israelis had something even I did not have. They were able to love and forgive their enemy, the Palestinians, in a way I wasn't able to, and I was the Christian who was supposed to love and forgive like Jesus taught. I spent 22 days in that hospital. Those days changed my life, changed the way I look at information, changed the way I read information. I watch television, I listen to the radio, because I realized that in the Arabic world, the Arabs are fed a fabricated lie by their governments about the Jews in Israel that is so far from reality. I spent 22 days in that hospital. Those days changed my life. I remember one of the ladies in the room with us, my mother was in the room with two other Muslim ladies. And one Muslim lady who's been there for 10 days, and the doctors would come in their morning rounds and they would check the wounded and they would treat them and they would look at her and they would change her bandage and they would check on her. And when they would leave the room, she would look at them and she would say, "I hate you all. I wish you were all dead." And for the first time in my life, I saw evil. Evil. Because when you are unable to be grateful for those people who saved your life, you have no soul. You have no conscience. You have just crossed the fine line that's very ugly on the other side. And I started realizing that Muslims teach their children hatred from their mother's milk, while we, Christians and Jews, talk about love, talk about compassion, talk about forgiveness, read our Bible, listen to what Jesus said. They have a completely different idea of understanding and completely different way of thinking than we do. I had to leave Israel because I had to go back to Lebanon and take care of my parents because I'm an only child and they had no one to take care of them and they were old. But I vowed that one day I will return to Israel, that one day I will come back and live amongst those people whose values I respected, whose characters I wanted to adopt, whom I admired. I was so blessed to be able to return to Israel 2 years later, and so fortunate to be able to become news anchor for World News in the Middle East, covering world events and meeting with world figures, from Margaret Thatcher to Yitzhak Rabin to Yitzhak Shamir to George Bush Sr., you name it. I was so blessed to be able to land the dream job. And in my job as news anchor for World News, I had to report on world events on a nightly basis. And I would cover world events. And I was able to read information and evaluate information that was not filtered through the Arabic propaganda filters that Arabs are oblivious to. And as I reported on the news every night, I started seeing a pattern developing. The pattern was, with all the terrorist attacks around the world, all over the Western world, the name of the perpetrators were always the same. Different geography, same names. Ahmed, Muhammad, Hussein, Ali. The name of the victims were always Christians and Jews, Westerners. Terry Waite, Terry Anderson, Colonel Higgins, Ken Timmerman, the Achille Lauro, the TWA. The list goes on and on. And I started realizing, I started connecting the dots. And I started realizing that what I used to think was a regional problem between the majority Muslims in the Middle East who have declared holy war on the minority Christians and Jews have become a worldwide problem. Sadly, no one in the world was paying attention. They always gave it an excuse. The Achille Lauro was just a special excuse. The Palestinian conflict was just a Palestinian-Israeli conflict. The Lebanese war was just a civil war. Our government in the United States today put every circumstance in a different department and closed the door. They didn't connect the dot and realize we are fighting an Islamic jihad that's spreading all around the world. So here we are today in America. September 11th woke Americans up. September 11th made Americans wake up and say, why do they hate us? What did we do to offend them? What did we do to make them hate us so much? I have two easy words for you. Because you are infidels. That's simply why they hate you. People do not realize that under the banner of Islam, La ilaha illallah Muhammadun Rasulullah. There is no God greater than Allah and Muhammad is his prophet. The Muslims murdered Jewish children in Israel. They massacred Christians in Lebanon. They killed Copts in Egypt, Assyrians in Syria, Hindus in India, Armenians in Turkey, and expelled over 900,000 Jews out of Arab land. All that happened before they ever came to America. Nobody wanted to pay attention. The bombing of our embassies in Africa, the bombing of the Kubar Towers in Saudi Arabia, the USS Cole, the bombing of the World Trade Center the first time in 1993. Nobody paid attention. The only difference between the attacks of 1993 and 2001 is the buildings didn't come down. That's the only difference. The World Trade Center buildings did not come down in 1993. It was a failed attack. And you would think we would have paid attention. Our FBI, after they made their arrest and started confiscating computers from the sheikhs to read what the computers were, they put it all in boxes. They found so many papers and so many religious papers. They put it all in boxes and put it away, calling it irrelevant religious material. Al-Qaeda manuals, irrelevant religious material. Nobody looked at it. Nobody paid attention. They treated it like a police crime. And then we had September 11th. And then America opened its eyes up. And today, as you and I are speaking, we have terrorist organizations that have set up shop on American soil, right here. They are living amongst us. They are working with us. Of all the terrorist organizations that have set up shop on American soil, and the top three are Al-Qaeda, Islamic Jihad, and Hamas. Hamas has the largest infrastructure on American soil. Hamas has cells in over 40 states in the United States. When people hear Hamas, they think Hamas is an Israeli problem. That's not my problem. That's those Jews' problem over there, 8,000 miles away. Hamas is here. And I'm going to name you some of the cities that Hamas has cells in. Hamas has cells in Boston, in New York, in Laurel, Maryland, in Potomac, Maryland, in Washington, D.C., in Herndon, Virginia, Springfield, Virginia, Raleigh, North Carolina, Boca Raton, Florida, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, Philadelphia, Cleveland, Charlotte, Orlando, Tampa, Detroit, Houston, Texas, Columbia, Missouri, Plainfield, Illinois, Kansas, Chicago, Denver, Oklahoma, Arlington, Texas, Dallas, Texas, Tucson, Seattle, San Francisco, Santa Clara, Los Angeles, San Diego, Anaheim, Orange County, LA. They are right here amongst us. In their charter, Hamas charter, which was written in 1988 and made public, they talk about their enemy to be destroyed. Article 22 of the Hamas charter, and I'm going to quote you. Quote, with their money, talking about their enemy, they created secret organizations that spread around the world in order to destroy societies and carry out Zionist interests. Such organizations are the Freemasons, Rotary Clubs, Lions Clubs, B'nai B'rits, and the likes. All of them are destructive espionage organizations to be destroyed. With their money, they've taken control of the imperialist states and pushed them to occupy many countries in order to exploit the wealth of those countries and spread corruption there. End quote. This is the Hamas charter. Now, how many good-hearted Lion Club members, Rotary Club members, Freemasons, know when they wake up in the morning to go to their meetings to raise money to better their communities, that they are mentioned in the Hamas charter as an enemy to be destroyed, Hamas, the largest terrorist organizations on American soil? Right here, the ignorance in our society is shocking. Hamas is not the only problem. Hezbollah is another problem. When you watch the news, and especially in the last year, when you watch the war in Lebanon between Hezbollah and Israel, and you watched how we were clearing out Lebanese citizens, quote, Americans, excuse me, American citizens coming to the United States who were trapped in Lebanon, Hezbollah has terror cells in the United States. Hezbollah has 11 cells in America. Our FBI arrested on American soil in the past few years 300 Hezbollah operatives. One of them was a general smuggled through the Mexican border. We know Al-Qaeda is working with the MS-13 gang, the notorious Mexican gang, in smuggling terrorists into our country as well as Hezbollah. Al-Qaeda is paying between $25,000 to $50,000 per terrorist to be smuggled into our country. Per terrorist. Hezbollah is doing the same thing. They are coming here. They are breeding here. They're heading state to the communities where there's a large Muslim concentration, such as L.A., Florida, and Detroit. They are marrying Muslim women who are already here and breeding terrorists within our country using our legal system, obtaining the citizenship. I was talking to a friend of mine in Lebanon about a few months ago, and he was telling me that he was at a Hezbollah party in South Lebanon, in Bint Jbeil. And one lady was bragging about the business that she was having, and she was very proud of herself. And her business is, as an American citizen who has an American passport, her business was to marry Hezbollah members, terrorists in Lebanon, and bring them to the United States. She is charging them $25,000 per marriage certificate. She brings them here, they file their papers. When they get their papers, they get a divorce, she goes back and marries another one. And if she's doing this, how many other people are doing it? We have terrorists breeding in our country. If you live in America today, you have shaken the hand of a terrorist, you have exchanged money with a terrorist, you have maybe bought something from a terrorist, you have maybe sat next to a terrorist in a movie theater. They are all around us. And we need to open our eyes. The infiltration of our society is not only happening through the borders. It's not only happening through the Mexican border. The infiltration of our society is happening on every level. The second level is the mosques in the United States. Almost 90% of the mosques in America are completely funded by the government of Saudi Arabia. Completely funded by the government of Saudi Arabia. And what they are teaching in these mosques is nothing but hate education against the infidels, Christians and Jews. Thank God for a privately funded organization like Freedom House, the Center for Religious Freedom, who went undercover last year for 1 year. They went undercover and spied on mosques. And they collected over 200 books and publications in Arabic provided by the government of Saudi Arabia to these mosques to teach Muslims living in America how to deal with infidels living in an infidel land and how to behave with them. In these books and publications, and I'm going to quote you, in all these books and publications, these Saudi books repeatedly exhort Muslims to, quote, hate them for their religion, meaning us, Christians and Jews and atheists and Buddhists and everybody else, to hate for Allah's sake, always oppose them in every way, maintain a wall of resentment against them. They say that democracy is responsible for all the horrible wars of the 20th century, and that attractive names like democracy, justice, freedom, brotherhood, and equality cause all of the world's problems. This is what they're teaching in America, using our democracy to topple our democracy. They say that it is the religious duty of every Muslim to impose, and I continue quoting, functionally Islamic government on every country in the world. This religious duty is binding in principle, in law, in self-defense, in community, and as a sacred obligation of jihad. In order to fulfill the sacred obligation of jihad, they must, and I continue quoting, invade its western heartland and struggle to overcome it until all the world shouts by the name of the Prophet Muhammad and the teachings of Islam spread throughout the world. Only then will Muslims achieve their fundamental goal. All religion will be exclusively for Allah. This is what they are teaching in mosques down the street from your community. Don't be fooled, my friend, with all this talk about interfaith dialogue and all that nonsense taking place in English. You need to go in and see what they are teaching in Arabic. They are literally building an army, an enemy from within to topple our democracy from within. The problem, not only in the mosques, but also in the private schools, in the madrasas, which is an Islamic schools in the United States. When you hear the word madrasas, you think Iran, Pakistan. That's when we hear the word madrasa is associated with. We have madrasas right here in the United States. One of the most notorious madrasas are in Virginia on the backyard of the White House. And what they're teaching young Islamic American students from kindergarten until high school, until 12th grade, they're teaching them that Christians and Jews are apes and pigs because they are cursed by Allah. They are teaching them, according to the Quran, that if there is a Jew behind the tree, go and kill him. Now, this hate education should not be tolerated in our country against any group of people. Absolutely none. This type of education should not be tolerated against anybody from any religion, from any color, from any ethnicity, from any background, from any nationality. Can you imagine how we will stand up and condemn if anybody would stand up and say or teach in any school that gays are pigs and blacks are apes? We would be the first ones to stand up and shut them up. Yet how come they let it happen in Islamic schools? We need to wake up and we need to be informed about what's happening in our country. The problem is not only the borders, it is not only the mosques, it is not only the Islamic communities within our nation. The problem is also in our universities. For the last 16 years, Saudi Arabia has been able to exploit the program that we have, that our government has instituted called Title VI. And our government has begun that program in schools because they wanted to train American students to learn different languages so they can assist our government in working overseas with different countries. So they will be an asset in protecting our country and be the eyes and ears of our country overseas and get into the diplomatic field. What happened is Saudi Arabia for the last 16 years started systematically pumping millions of dollars, petrodollars, into our universities to brainwash our students. What they have begun doing is setting up Middle East study departments, political science departments, and staffing them with Islamic professors or Christian Palestinian anti-American anti-Semitic professors who have been literally brainwashing our children to teach our children that America is the problem, Israel is the problem, that anything, any problem in the world is our fault. And here is the extent of Saudi meddling and influence that's been taking place in our universities. King Fahd of Saudi Arabia has donated $20 million to set up Middle East Studies, MES, at the University of Arkansas. $5 million donated to Berkeley's MES from two Saudi sheikhs linked to Al-Qaeda. And Berkeley, of course, took the money. Harvard has received $22.5 million, as did Georgetown, $28.1 million just this last spring. $11 million went to Cornell, $5 million to MIT, $1.5 million to Texas A&M, $1 million to Princeton. Rutgers received $5 million chair endowment, as did Columbia, which tried to conceal the source of the funds. Other recipients of Saudi-tainted monies are, they include UC Santa Barbara, Johns Hopkins University, Rice University, American University, University of Chicago, USC, UCLA, Duke University, Syracuse University, Howard University, and countless others. We pump the gas, they pump poison into our children's mind and teach them to hate America. University of Idaho, Washington State University, Ohio State University, Arizona State University, University of Michigan at Ann Arbor, UC Los Angeles, UC Irvine, UC Berkeley, UCLA, University of South Florida, Georgetown, Columbia, Harvard, Connecticut, and numerous others. We're not talking about only Ivy League universities. We're talking from the top to the state level to community colleges. They have infiltrated our universities. The Muslim Student Associations, the Muslim student clubs have more chapters on American college campuses than the Democrats and the Republicans combined. Now, that is something to worry about. Now, how come you're not hearing this information from the mainstream media? You're not going to hear this information from the mainstream media because it is the truth and it is politically incorrect. And I believe we need to take political correctness and throw it in the garbage where it belongs and start saving our country. As for me, I will no longer stay silent because we're going to lose our country. Because we're going to lose our country until we cherish and value our country and be willing to die to save our freedoms as much as our enemy is willing to die to kill our freedoms and to kill us. We need to have the same passion. We need to burn with passion like our founding fathers who came to this country, who founded this great country of ours. So we all can come here. And when I look around in this room, I see a tapestry of different colors or different nationalities, of different languages, of different people, of different immigrants like me who came to this country to build a dream. America is our dream. We came here to better ourselves. We came here so we may live in freedom. America is the best country in the world where every individual citizen America is the melting pot. It is God's gift to the universe. Trust me, take it from an immigrant. If you have never lived outside of this country, this is heaven on earth. What we need to do in this country, we need to unite together as one as Americans. We need to throw away all the titles that we use. African American, Irish American, Lebanese American, whatever American. I am an American. I am an American. wonderful thing in our country is we have the freedom as Americans to stand here, to express our views, to be able to share opinion, something we cannot do anywhere else. At least in this country, I am able to stand on a podium and look at other people and may not agree with their point of view, but I respect his opinion to be able to stand up and his right to speak against me, because this is what our country stands for and this is what we pride ourselves on. He will not be able to do that in his country or whatever he came from. I believe when you speak from the heart, when you speak with passion, when you speak the truth, when you are on fire for what you believe in, for what you love, for what you respect, people will drive miles to watch you burn. And I urge you to burn from within with your love for this country, to be able to have the courage to stand up to defend it, to have the courage to debate with your friends who want to put our country down. For anyone who does not like America, for anyone who does not respect or value what America has to offer, I have an offer for them. We will gladly give them a one-way ticket to go back to wherever they want to go. This country is holy ground. And unless people who come here, like our founding fathers, who came from other countries where they knew what tyranny and oppression is, and they appreciated this land, and they built this land, and they built this land for us, so we may preserve it for our future generation. Right now, we are seeing our land slip away to our enemy. And we are sitting, watching American Idol, watching reality television, not paying attention to anything. Sadly, we need to wake up. We need to wake up. And I tell you what I am doing to wake our country up. In 2002, I founded an organization called American Congress for Truth. We are not politically correct. And we love it. I founded American Congress for Truth. ACT. Because I wanted to empower people to act. I wanted to mobilize, empower, network, inform millions of uneducated Americans about the threat of Islam to world peace and our national security. We are fighting Islamofascism. We are fighting an enemy that is worse than communism. We are fighting an enemy that is bent on destroying us. Now, we can sit together and make diversity quilts and do feely-goody things and pass our time, but we've got to wake up to the reality. We've got to wake up that we have an enemy organizing within our country, and we've got to stop it. So here's how we're going to stop it. With ACT, AmericanCongressForTruth.com, and I urge every single one of you tonight to sign up on our website so you can start receiving our emails and action alerts, which is a free subscription, because I want you informed. We started informing others. We send emails one a day or every other day, or whenever we do not have technical difficulties. Technology is wonderful and a curse at the same time. The name of the organization is AmericanCongressForTruth.com. And we are nonprofit, but it's easier to remember the .com instead of the .org. We started sending emails to thousands of members nationwide. Right now, we have thousands of members in all 50 states in the United States. We are getting ready to start setting up chapters in every city and state in the United States to mobilize average citizens to stand up and work together to save our country. We're going to send an email out informing everyone of our plans within the next 2 months in organizing every community so we can teach the average citizen how to get involved and what you can do as a citizen so we can form groups. Part of the things we want to do is monitor universities. And I'll give you a few tips. Did you know that everybody in America over the age of 55 can take a university course free of charge? Free of charge. So we're going to take our citizens and our chapters, and we're going to assign people to go sit, take courses to monitor professors and what they're saying about America. They're going to sit in classes, and they're going to see any professor that says anything derogatory about our country and our nation, he is to be reported to the administration. And if the administration is not going to do anything about it, we, the people, are going to do something about it, report him to the media and expose him. We want to set up chapters that we're going to train, and you're going to be part of those chapters because you're going to log on to the website, AmericanCongressForTruth.com, and sign up. We're going to set up chapters on the websites as well in the communities. And we're going to teach people how to do lobbying, how to do advocacy, how to do media monitoring, how to write letters. Right now, we send action alerts to our members. If there is an issue, we send an action alert and say, there's a bill being voted on in Congress tomorrow. We need you to call your elected official. Here is his name, her name, here's their phone number. Call them and let them know where you stand on the issues. I am a believer on tightening the screws on our elected officials and make them stand up and work for us instead of for the lobbyists. I have a very simple philosophy. We put them in office, we can take them out of office as easily as we put them in. They work for us, not the other way around. Sadly, too many people are not bold enough to call their elected officials, to have a relationship with their elected officials. Many people go to the voting booth, vote according to political party line, click the click, without even really knowing much about their elected official or where he or she stands on the issues. So we're going to take care of that. I talk to people all the time, and I tell them how important it is to contact their elected officials. Here is how important it is. I talk to elected officials all the time, on a national level, congressmen and senators, and I ask them, how many people do you need to hear from in order for you to make an issue your top priority and pass a bill about it? And you will be shocked as what they say. 40 to 50 people. That's it! And here is the science behind the numbers. They believe that if one person has the energy and the dedication to pick up the phone and make a phone call or write a letter or send an email or send a fax, he or she are representing 1,000 couch potatoes who feel the same way but are too lazy to get up and make the phone call. That translates to 40 to 50,000 voters on election day. That can make or break an election. You, my friends, every citizen sitting on these chairs tonight, have more power than the biggest lobbyist in Washington, D.C. with the biggest money, because you are the voters, not the lobbyists. There are much more of us than there are of them. We just need to know the issues, and we need to know action alerts, so we will know what to do and who to contact. We sent an email alert yesterday. We knew a senator from Pennsylvania was going to be on the Tim Russett show on MSNBC this morning. He is going to ACARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations, who is the devil within our midst, fundraiser. So we launched an email telling all our members to contact MSNBC, because you, the average citizen, are not going to know this information unless we tell you. This is why I need you to be signed up with us so you'll know this stuff. So we sent an email to all our members. We said, contact MSNBC. We gave them the link to MSNBC. Contact the Tim Russett Show. Here is the number. Here are the questions you need to propose, because MSNBC asks you, propose question for us so we will know what to ask the senator. We sent a list of questions. We sent a list of the excuses that MSNBC should not accept from the senators. This is the power that you have as individuals. So instead of sitting around and complaining about us being so frustrated about, now I know what's happening, what can I do about it because I am so frustrated and I want to do something? We are creating the vehicle for every single one of you to do something about it. And we need your help as much as you need our help. And I'm going to talk a little bit about action as we wrap up tonight. My parents, God bless their soul. I had the most outstanding parents any child could ever have. I live to honor my parents. I live my life to represent my parents in the best way I can. My parents taught me a very important lesson since I was a child. They always said to me, Brigitte, tell people, show people how you feel. Don't tell them. Let your actions speak louder than your words. Show them how you feel. When my parents died, I wanted to honor my parents and send a message to children, to my children yet unborn, about where my loyalty lies. My father died, and I buried him in Israel on Mount Zion in Jerusalem. My mother had died 9 months before him. So when I knew I was coming to America, I went to Lebanon because I wanted to reunite my parents. I went to Lebanon. I dug my mother out of her grave. I took her out of her casket. I put her in a baby casket that I made custom fit the trunk of my car. And I drove her to Jerusalem and buried her with my father on Mount Zion. They are buried in the Oscar Schindler Cemetery with Oscar Schindler. If you have ever visited Jerusalem and Oscar Schindler, you walked by their grave. This is action. I wanted to send a message to my children yet unborn with my actions where my loyalty lies, because I always wanted them to be pulled to Jerusalem, to the Holy Land, to the land of God, instead of them ever having to go back to the Middle East or to Lebanon. And I urge you tonight to let your actions speak louder for you than your word. It's not only enough to pray. We can pray, but God uses His people to make a difference. And I'm going to end on this note. So many times in the last 100 years, evil prevailed because good people did nothing, stood by and done nothing, allowing evil to prevail. As America stood up against and defeated communism, this is the time we need to stand up and defeat Islamofascism, Islamic hatred, bigotry, and intolerance. Thank you for coming tonight. Thank you for having me here. I love you. Thank you. Well, we are going to have a book signing in the back, and I hope that every single one of you will buy a book, not only for yourselves, but you will get a book that you will donate it to your school, to the teachers of your children, that you will put it in the hands of every professor that you know at every university, that you would donate it to your local library, that you would send it to the newspaper in your local community, that you would send it to your local TV stations, because we get together as people, we can work to inform and wake up our country. I thank you humbly for coming here tonight and listening to me speak. It was an honor and a privilege to be here. Thank you.